This is the BCA Podcast, the outreach arm of Beards Creek Adventures, and your weekly source for all things faith, family, and stewardship. We're your hosts, Charlie and Mike Culkin. Join us each week for interviews, discussions, laughs, and encouragement. We hope you guys enjoy the show. Welcome back to BCA Podcast. We are celebrating today. This is our 50th episode.
That's a lot of episodes.
Yeah, especially if you listen to the first one. Well, the intro wasn't bad. But if you listen to the first one with Ryan Martai, I didn't know what I was doing. And now, 50 episodes later, I don't really know what I'm doing.
I was gonna say I thought you were leading into now we kind of know what we're doing. I was like, I don't know. So I'm glad you're honest.
It's funny. Ryan mentioned this week because we're on a podcast together for our church, and he goes, yeah. He goes. I listened to the podcast this last week with Pete Rogers and John Goodwin. He goes, you've come a long way. Like you're interviewing and stuff, and I'm thinking, a long way from what, the first podcast? He goes, yeah, like over time you've gotten better. I said, well, just remember, you were the first interview we did, so if it was bad, it's just as much a reflection on you.
Right. But yeah, Joe and I listened to that one in the truck to Darien the other day, with the John Goodwin and Pete Rogers one.
Yeah, the sound was off on it a little bit.
Yeah, but some of that's when you're streaming, you're not in person all in the same mics, makes it harder.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, Pete's got this really nice Rode mic, and John just got a new mic set up, and mine's just kind of a generic one, which I put the foam over it, you know, thinking that was going to help the sound. It didn't. And Pete thought mine was the one that sounded the best, but I think it's because you're streaming over that StreamYard, so...
Yeah,
it was good. What did Joe think of it?
He liked it. He was about falling asleep, but that's just because he's always falling asleep. I drive and he's in the shotgun seat, and that's how it goes.
I've been there.
I was at Tri-State, I was the napper. Get in the car, I'd eat my bag of combos and a half gallon of chocolate milk, and I'd pass out.
Yeah. That whole world of driving for an hour and a half or whatever it is and getting paid for it.
Well, that's the thing. Hamlin in Lakeside, it's an hour and a half, hour 15 or so to drive up there and then back. So that's like 2.5 hours that I'm getting paid for, and I'm just driving. I put my music on. We'll stop at Crosby's before we, you know, really hit the road and get Arizona's.
Yep.
And then Tri-State was, there were times we drove probably 4 or 5 hours in a day total. Right. That we were going to Cheektowaga to do a stump, or to fill the dirt, or take the grindings. That's what it was. The first trip was take the grindings from a stump, and then we came back like a week later to fill it with dirt. And it was that whole job was there was a whole thing with it. They grind it once, said it wasn't enough, ground it again, and we were contracting a grinder because we're not driving our stuff all the way. Yeah, that was a whole mess. And then we go do one other tree job and drive back. But the tree job that we did up there was in Lockport, so that's an hour from Cheektowaga, just about.
Right.
And so it's an hour out there, an hour to the other job, so that's 2 hours, and then it's about an hour and a half back to the shop or so. And so that was 3.5-4 hours of driving just to do a job and a half.
That's always
baffled me how we make money on those jobs.
My cousin Tom, well, the way you make money is you charge them for the drive time,
too. Yeah, well, we didn't. That was a contract with the town of Cheektowaga. It was, this is our price, and that was it.
My cousin worked for the state as a surveyor, and at one point, there was a guy who was picking him up, and the guy lived in, like, Jamestown, and would pick my cousin up in Wayland, and then they would go to, like, Utica to do a job.
Yeah.
All of that time, they're being, and they started, you know, 4:10s, whatever it was, the guy would leave Jamestown at 7 o'clock, getting paid that whole time. My cousin getting paid the whole time.
Yep.
Drive out there, do their survey stuff, take an hour lunch, and then
drive back.
It's like you're actually working for 2 hours out of the day. Yeah. Welcome to New York.
Well, that's why we swapped the 4:10s for my job, is because it was, we we get out there an hour and a half drive. We're supposed to take our 15 minutes breaks and our half hour lunch. We would have rounded out to like 2 hours of working, right, which is nothing. And so we do 4 hours. And honestly, we swap the 410s because I like hunting on Fridays. And I like being able to have a 3 day weekend every week. And everybody at the park's jealous of it because nobody else is really allowed to do it. There's a couple of here and there, but like, because I'm in charge of myself and my crew.
But you're right, 2 hours. For cutting, you're almost like, why bother taking the saw out?
Right.
Like,
right.
I sit here at camp and think, I got to take those trees. I got to go do this. But I had a breakfast this morning, and, you know, that was from, I didn't get back here until 8:30, fed the chickens. And then I'm like, you know, my day's shot. It's 9 o'clock.
my thing is, I got a meeting at one, or I'm going to somewhere at 1:30.
Yep.
And so my whole morning's shot because I got something at one.
Exactly right.
You know, like, by the time I get the saw going and all the fuel and my chaps and get out there.
Yep, exactly.
And then I got to call it early so I can shower and get it cleaned up and pack. I might as well just not go out.
That's exactly. I fall into that trap all the time. And then when I do get going, right, and those days, like the day that I pulled the taps last week, once I'm out there and going, it's like, now I don't want to stop.
Yeah.
You know, I'm was boiling, I pulled the taps, I'm cleaning stuff up, I'm filled the tractor, you know, it was getting low on diesel, and I mean, and then I'm like, well, I got the tractor over here, I'll just push the log pile, you know, the cut logs. Well, I'm here, I might as well cut some, so I ended up cutting for 2 hours. Like, it just...
Yep. Yeah, I got to keep that motivation rolling. Yeah,
once you get the momentum, then you're there, but...
I was just having a conversation with Jake about this, because he and I both probably have a little bit of an ADHD kind of thing. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't want to diagnose it, The moment I diagnose it, and then I got to, you know...
An excuse.
Yeah, I got to deal with it. But I'll, you know, if I get home, and I, like, take my boots off, I'm done with the day. The moment those boots are off, I'm done with the day. And I just, you know, my motivation to do anything's gone.
Yeah.
So Jake's workaround is he doesn't take his shoes off when he gets home until he's like done with the day. So he'll get home and he'll leave his shoes on to shower. He'll leave his shoes on to do laundry or whatever else he's doing and clean the house or whatever. Because those are his work shoes. And so mentally there's this connection that when I have these boots on, I'm working.
Huh.
And so then, okay, now I'm going to be working all the time. As long as I've got him on, it tricks your brain into thinking you're still in work mode, even though you're at home.
Well, I can always tell when he's
full of dirt.
Yeah, and I can always tell when he's done working because
the memes start rolling.
Like, yeah, it's like six or eight memes, bam, bam, bam. I'm like, oh, Jake's done working today.
Yep.
So, back to 50 episodes.
Right, right.
Talk about ADHD, but it's been. You know, the goal when we started out was to talk about faith, family, and then stewardship things, habitat stuff. I mean, the long-term goal is for me to retire in about 8 years. That'll put me at 60. And to have you and Emily, this is my goal. It might not be you two's, your goals, but and to really then go full-time into... Beards Creek Consulting.
Management plans.
Yeah. And we're doing some of that now.
Yeah.
But it's here and there. It's not it's not a full-time clientele. Yeah. And so the podcast helps us to keep a name out there, to have conversations, to hopefully entertain a little bit.
Establish a presence.
Yes. We have to establish a presence. A
lot of orange coming over that hill.
And there it is. The Escanaba and the Moonlight quote of the week. And then within the podcast, my goal was I'd like to get to 100.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't remember the statistics because it's... You know, we say
75% of all statistics are made up on the spot.
That's right. But the statistics are something like one out of 10, or no, one out of 100 podcasts make it past episode 10. Mm. And then of those that do make it past, it's like infinitesimal. Is that a word?
I don't know.
There's a tiny amount of those that make it past 10 that actually make it to 100. And then there's something within the algorithm where if you get to 100, now you're rolling.
Yeah.
And our listenership has dropped, which they say is normal. Like, you come out of the blocks, everybody's excited to, you know.
Your friends and family are there to support, and then they're kind of...
But we we also see, you can see ups and downs too in terms of time of the year and,
yep.
And then also, the topics.
Yeah. That's,
you know, so there's been there was an increase with this week's because, we had Pete Rogers and John Goodwin.
Right.
Well, John's got, you know, 55,000 followers or 60,000 followers on Wild Game Freaks.
Yep.
So he collaborated with advertising. Pete's got, I think he's over 2 million downloads. Mm-hmm. And he's...
That's Christian Outdoor Podcast.
Christian Outdoor Podcast. And he's, you know, he collaborated and shared. So people, you know, catch it more.
Right, right.
But I'm amazed at how many people, like, just randomly will stop and talk to me or will shoot me an email or, hey, yeah, I listened to your podcast this week.
Yeah.
And it feels like...
I get snaps from buddies from Ranger School that... Justin, it was out surveying. He's been working on, like, the Bill Stadium surveying. And and he sent me a Snapchat that he's got a podcast going in his truck on the way to work from Mars. And he was... It's just like, I never would have expected that. Like, I didn't know that he was even listening to him. All I know is that, you know, like, they know about it.
Yeah.
You know? And then he's texting me asking he wants us to do a little management plan for his property.
Oh, right. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's, okay.
That's Barnes. Barnes, yeah.
So, JD and Carrie and Mom and I went out to, we went to the Hole in the Wall Barcade Friday night. And a friend of mine who I know from Rotary was there. He really neat guy. I like him a lot. He runs a farm. It's a farm stand, but he also sources restaurants with, lettuce and, you know, all kinds of stuff, not just lettuce. But he goes, I caught that podcast or whatever. And like, it's because I knew him, but you know, JD and Kara both, you know, Carrie's like, oh, did you listen to the one with us on it? But I was kind of like feeling like, hey, we're kind of famous locally at least.
But yeah.
Really, it's just because we were friends and he was listening to it. But so it's kind of cool, you know, that people are listening, you know?
Right. We're not doing these for nothing.
Right, right. And, you know, Mom never listens unless we're listening to it on the way up to bowling or something. So, which is perfect because she doesn't ever seem to listen in our marriage either. So,
boy,
there's the test right there. We'll see if she listened to this one or not.
There you go.
She's so funny. She goes, I'm not really a podcast person. And then she'll come in and she'll tell me about, she goes, I was listening to Chip Ingram during lunch. I go, what do you mean you were listening to Chip Ingram? Well, he does this show on the radio for an hour. That's a podcast. She goes, no, it's on the radio. I said, it's a podcast.
It's a radio podcast.
But I'm not a podcast person.
No.
So, so 1 year, we've gone through spring, summer, fall, and winter. I got my seasons right. And we've had a bunch of people on.
We've had 25 people on.
Yeah.
You know, there were a couple of family, but we had a surprising number that weren't related to us and were willing to come on.
Yeah, willing. I had to beg and plead.
paid actors.
Yeah. If you have Venmo, we can have you on the podcast. Yeah, so we mentioned Pete and John. We started early with our highest rated podcast is still, I can't believe I got to say this, but... At least the last that I looked, it was still Emily had the most listens.
Emily, was that the one with Emily Anna, that one, or was it a different one?
No, it was the first one Emily was on. It was called A Woman's Take on the Hunting World. And she said that she...
shared it a lot?
Shared it, but she also listened to it a lot. I think it probably counts every time. Yeah, because it had 970 listens.
Wow.
Our intro had 990. And then the second one was Hunting the Burbs with Aaron Curtis, Nate St. James, and Shawnee. Yep. And then after that was with Papa, Hunting the Decks with Choke. And then... Emily and Anna, that one was the next one, Queens of the Forest. And that had 810. And then Sean Livermore from Trophy Line. I'm just giving you the top 10.
Yeah.
Sean Livermore from Trophy Line. We had 800 even with him. Forest Management Plans with guest forester Emily Culkin also had 800 even. And then Moosey from Catch and Release, that was 710. Scouting and Tales of the Hunt Part 2, not the first part. That was with Aaron Curtis, Anthony Ninney, Marchetti, and Nate St. James. That had 660. And then rounding out the top 10, A Biblical Perspective on Hunting with John Goodwin. That had 630. So pretty cool.
Yeah.
I mean, it's to think that you're getting that many people listening. And
well, and you know, you say 900 or 800 people listening, and I can't think of 800 people,
right?
Like right off the top of my head, you know, let alone 800 that I would think would listen to this,
right?
And then when you consider, you know, we've had posts that like the deer on the iceberg post that had a couple million views on it. Was crazy.
What was up with that?
To think over a million people have seen something that we shared is crazy. You know, I share memes on my story all the time, and you know, I'm getting 40 or 50 people. And so to share something and to see a couple million is wild.
Yeah, that's the power of going viral.
Yep.
That part, like,
well, and that's, you know, that's just a meme. That was just something that you shared, and I think the algorithm just picked that one to share around. You know,
Well, and to be fair, John and I shared that, and he, but it was,
but he doesn't have 2 million followers.
No,
you know, like that got that outreached past both of our, you know,
20,000 likes, and
I like 2 million. To think that we helped him get some of those views.
I think let's go with that. You're welcome, John. We've made you Insta famous.
Yeah. Yeah. So 25 on, probably roughly half of them weren't related to us.
Yeah.
I'm looking at numbers right now. And there were a couple of repeats. John Goodwin was on a couple of times, you know, Emily and myself.
Well, you're a co-host.
I guess I'm a host now, yeah. But we had a handful that were on multiple times, and I know we've got some more planned up for the future, and I think this year will be interesting. It is interesting. I think I'd like to see a chart of this of the month by month, our peaks, because I'd be willing to bet deer season we get a little bit more because we got more to talk about. Is that have you looked at that at all?
Yeah, so there were a couple there were a few weeks midsummer that were lower, but it was hard to, you know, we would get bumps with through guests. And then in the fall, it was actually a little bit lower because I think people were hunting.
That's true.
And so they just don't have the time to listen to
it. Yeah.
And now we're starting to come back up. You know, I think, you know, winter season people are.
Yeah. Well, I guess I could see hunters listening to hunting podcasts about hunting and about our hunting adventures of the season later.
Yep.
Because right now I'm feeling that itch to, I want to be, you know, I want to be hunting again. I'm getting back into that. I've recovered from deer season and I'm rested. I'm ready to go hunt again. And so it is interesting to.
End of August, we saw a spike there.
Yeah.
Like end of August going into September.
And that's probably the same thought process. Exactly. Is everybody's getting ready for deer season. They're getting their food plots set. And I know we were posting some of that of, you know, the different seed companies we're going with or different, you know, what we're doing and talking to different people on that as well.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. This was, it's funny. We say that last week's podcast was supposed to be with Back 40 Seed. And they're starting to get swamped. They're busy. So I moved things around, put Pete and John in with that, and then you and I are celebrating 50th. and then we're going to catch up with Back 40 in a bit. So, but we do have a bunch of guests lined up. But I'm trying. Like Mom is, who's not a podcast person, is like, well, why don't you do a guest, and then you and Charlie do an in between week and do a guest. And I'm like, yeah, that kind of makes sense. And some of our better ones recently have been you and I in terms of listenership.
So. Yeah, I think there is something to say about kind of putting a little build up to it. You know, if we mention that we're going to have somebody on, in this podcast in 2 weeks, you know, we're going to have Hitless Seeds or whoever, you know, people are going to kind of be watching for that. And you post something on Instagram, like, you know, stay tuned, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
It builds some up versus if you just drop a podcast, it's like, hey, we've got, you know, John Goodwin and Pete Rogers. That's somebody people want to watch. But if they're just learning about it right then, there's no anticipation in that. And so I think that, you want to build a little bit of that. Some suspense.
Well, and I want to do that, and I think I completely agree. The problem is that people often have to back out. You know, we try and record. I try and record on Thursdays,
right?
And that gives me time to edit to then drop on. They've been coming out at like 1 a.m. on Mondays, and that's. So that's been working, but if there's, I don't want to announce who we've got coming if for some reason they back out. But I can tell you who we're in contact with and who has agreed. We just have to record it. I can say that. So, I'm trying to think. We have, and I'm the reason I'm hesitating is because I can't remember his first name.
It's going to be a great podcast.
Yes, this. How am I doing this morning? So the guy who runs Trophy Tracks, who owns that, Dan something, and it's killing me that I can't remember his name. Nothing. Yeah, well, you're not much of a help as a co-host.
Google it. Pull it up, Jamie. No,
you could probably just pull it up on Insta. Well, we had Blake Lawson on. He was the other one I was thinking, but we already played that one out. I'll have to get some of these others. The big one is... with the big two that we've landed is Lance Krueger.
Mm-hmm.
He's a photographer, deer photographer. And then Larry Wyson. So Lance Krueger, Larry Wyson, the guys from the owner of Trophy Tracks, the owners of Back 40 Seed that we're experimenting with this year. So we've got some folks that are coming that I've made some contacts with that are all have committed. We just need to get them recorded. Moosey's going to be back on. We're going to talk some of his hunting adventures. Mm-hmm. Last time we talked about the clothing line with Catch and Release, but he
he's got some stories.
Yeah, he does. He ran a website in the early 2000s called Hunt Talk. It was like a chat group thing, and he sold that to I don't remember who it was, maybe Randy Newberg or somebody like that. I'm just throwing names out. I don't even know if these people exist or not, but he sold that. But he has hunted all over the world.
Yeah.
New Zealand and Africa, and so he's going to share some of those stories with us. So it's exciting, you know, that we've got 50 down, and I'm just as excited about the next 50.
Right.
So
we're running into our midlife crisis right now. We hit that 50, and I think we got to get a motorcycle or something. We got to do something drastic.
A new bow.
Yeah.
Let's
get a new bow.
We need to give ourselves a gift for surviving.
Celebrate this. I got to get something edgy too. Make me feel alive and young again.
Yeah. Try a saddle or a crossbow.
Ooh, a crossbow.
Yeah.
No, in our 50 podcasts, that's come up about 30 times. And I don't know if we need to touch it again.
what have been the topics that have hit the most?
We have hit a lot. I mean, we've done burns have been a big one. I know I've got my own passions about. I know crossbows have come up and they shoot, don't shoot, you know, aging bucks. Do you shoot does? Do you shoot bucks? You know, we've had podcasts dedicated to hitting those controversies. I'm trying to think of some of the other big ones that we've done outside just stories of the topics that we've hit. I know we've done just basic management in terms of timber or species. How do you balance what are you trying to, you can't get everything
right.
Balancing that.
Have one coming up on biodiversity.
Ooh, biodiversity.
Yeah.
The oak tree for me is a diversity hire. It's a big one for me.
But you can put the money out there because there's more chance you're going to see it reach maturity than I am.
Yeah, or my kids.
My diversity hire is a couple more apple trees just for the deer. Mm. And I want mature ones so I don't have to wait around for these saplings to grow up.
You gotta have patience, man.
And the all hated red cedar.
Why is it hated?
Most land managers, at least out west, hate them. Like, you got to cut them down, burn them, get rid of them, because they just overtake.
Yeah, not around here so much.
No, but we've got wet areas, and I want to provide some.
I think they do well with that. Well, that's not fun. We were talking conifers.
Yep.
And you wanted conifers to go in their swampy areas, and I think we planted some tamaracks.
Yep.
Or larch.
I haven't found any of those, though.
Well, here's what I think is funny, that we planted tamaracks and, I guess it's not European larch. I think they were American larch, but that's Eastern larch. Larix laricina, in case anybody's worried about us. You know, out west, don't know what I'm talking about with with the names.
You know how I always remember that?
No.
Because for whatever reason, the branch on the larch reminds me of a larynx, like your like esophagus.
It just rolls off the tongue. Larch, larynx, laricina, you know.
Yeah. Fagus grandifolia.
Right.
moving along.
But anyway, so I think it's funny that we put larch in as kind of like, because we were wanting conifers for that thermal cover.
Yep.
But larch lose their needles lose in their the needles. Winter.
Yeah, I think that was a nod to Emily because she really loves the...
I love the colors.
Yeah.
You know, like that yellow is really, I see a post, it comes around every year in the fall. It's a guy that planted a bunch of trees on some property and now they're all grown, they're mature. But they were all either some kind of pine or a spruce or something along like that. They were evergreens. And mixed in the shape of a smiley face, he put larch. So in the fall, all the other trees are green and you just get this yellow smiley face from the larch. And it's on this hillside and I think it's really cool.
That's cool. I'll have to look for that.
Yeah.
We also planted some white, they were white pines. White pines,
yep.
And they're actually doing well.
Some of them better than others.
Yep. And I found three more over in the cut we did the first year.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if we clear around them, they'll do better.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they're coming up.
Yeah, some of those species are weird where whether or not, you know, there's shade tolerant. I think it's loblolly pine. Don't get mad at me if I forgot the species wrong. I think it's loblolly that they'll grow and they'll start small underneath. And for their first 5 or 10 years of their life, they will only just set their roots underneath the grass. And they won't grow. I mean, they'll stay a foot tall for like 5-10 years. And then in a snap, they just shoot up. And it's crazy because they've just established this root system. Sometimes like a fire will go through. They've got some resistance. Other stuff burns. They're open and they shoot up, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And so there's some species like that they're kind of thriving underneath. And I think that's, we're getting that a little bit with those pines, is that really they're going to need light, but they can be relatively tolerant, you know, especially in those earlier years because they'll sun scorch. I mean, if you tried to plant a seedling pine out in the, you know, wide open, they'll scorch just as easy. They're kind of that mid-range.
Yep.
So it's probably not bad that they're in a little bit of a shade.
Yep.
I think some of their issue is that they're not getting any sun, you know, and that's the hard balance, because it also depends on how much water we get.
Right.
Because we'll have a year that's there's no moisture, and now they're a lot less tolerant of the sun. And, they're more likely to get scorched with less water. And so that'll vary year to year. So you don't want to clear everything out and give them sun, hoping that we get rain this year, and then not. Now you're scorching them, and that's...
And so what I've done, and I hate doing it, because they're planted in a bedding area that we cut. It's about it might be an acre cut over there that... we're just letting old growth, you know, kind of feel to it, you know, ragweeds and there's some raspberries and different things that are coming up in there now. Like, so they're in that area. So it's a grass area. And I'll go in and stomp the grasses down around those so they're not competing with it. But to do that, now you're walking in an area where we're hoping the deer bed.
Right, right.
So we try and stay out of it, but it's...
Yeah. Well, and it really is. It's those first 2-3 years that really matter. So when you plant them, you scrape all the grass and ground all around it, so that there's no competition right at its root base, and let it establish itself. And if you kind of take care of them those first few years, and then after the first 3 or 4 years, if they're gonna take and survive at this point, there's not that much you can do to help them. They need to either be able to do it or not.
Yep.
So
it's like sending a child off to college.
Right, right.
But they're putting on about 6 inches a year now.
Yeah.
I mean,
6 inches is a lot.
Yeah,
they're growing. Almost too much, if you ask some people.
Yeah, wow. they're definitely picking up. And so I think it looks like all 6 of the crabapple trees that we put in where the forb area that we cut, they look like they survived.
Yep.
And
they didn't get their buds eaten off because...
Yeah, and that you can't, unless you cage them.
Yep.
But I've got tubes on them to keep the mice and the rabbits off of the. But, they've all got buds and ready to go. But that stuff just takes forever.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm thinking I'm going to get, maybe 3 more apple trees and put them in that area. And the problem is, so when you plant apple trees and cedars in the same area, you get what's called cedar rust on the apples.
Yeah.
So I don't know how far the distance required
needs to be. And some of that, it's going to vary on our wind patterns.
Yeah. But the cedars I want to put to the west, the apples are to the east, and our wind pattern is right.
Yeah. But then again, around here, I say that, and then every time I set up a stand planning on that wind pattern, and I go to try and hunt it, the wind is going east to west, or it's going north to, it's never going what I want it to do.
Right, we had a lot of wind out of the south.
It's a weird wind this year.
Yeah,
yeah.
Really weird. So, and then, this spring we'll have a lot of that kind of conversation about food plots and... putting in pollinator plants again, and we've ordered our soybean and corn through the NDA. So if you're not aware, listeners, you can get Roundup Ready soybean and corn, 50-pound bags, through your local NDA chapter if you're an NDA member. And so I think... while we were sitting here, I got an email about it. Usually they're not in this quick. I just ordered last week, so my guess is it's not in yet. But nope, it's just a email saying, exciting opportunity to purchase corn and soybean food plot seed. And here's this last year, and I think I'm going to do that again this year, is I planted the corn, but I planted the rows a little bit wider.
Mm-hmm.
Most farmers will do somewhere 6 or 8 inches between rows. And I did about 1 foot or more. And then towards the end of summer, we hit it with Roundup, killed off the weeds, and then just broadcasted brassicas in there. So in between the rows were all these purple top turnips and radishes and stuff. And so even when the corn was gone, there was food to be had in there.
Yeah,
and there's screening as well. So
that's the difference between just trying to get the absolute most plant and mass as you can out of the property you have, which you're really trying to do in farming, and trying to provide for deer and more than just total mass of the plant. And we're using it for cover, we're using it for we want them to be able to move freely within it as well,
We've got, I'm sure we'll do more TSI conversations. I don't know why I'm just getting more and more frustrated. Maybe it's because I'm seeing it more and more with hinge cutting. I think it's got a place for it, but I just don't, I don't see it,
Yeah, I just saw a post about that. If your hinge cuts don't look like this in 3 to 5 years, you're doing it wrong. And it was a bent over tree that had sprouts coming all along the spine straight up, which... I get that you're creating dense cover, but in that that's only going to work with a certain tree species. You're to say that if you're hinge cutting and it's not doing that, you're doing it wrong. Doing it wrong might just be you're doing it with the wrong species of tree. Because if you try and do that with a pine tree, it's not going to work.
No,
there's
an ash doesn't like to bend.
Beech, you're going to get those sprouts. I'm blanking on the other species that I know was really good for that. Aspen, you'll get those sprouts, but it's, you know, you don't necessarily want those. We have a lot more maple, and maple, you're not necessarily going to get them, but that's what deer really like, that sugar buds, you know? And so it's there. I think it's a temporary management. Yeah, I don't think it's so the long-term that we want to use.
Right. And then the other thing that it does, right? So if you do it quote unquote right, and you're getting those coming off and you know, off the tree and growing upward, it shades out the area below it. Mm-hmm. So now you're not getting any of that native growth that is so beneficial.
Yep. And as much as deer love those buds, I'm telling you, the vegetation, the ground vegetation, is far superior for deer than the woody buds and woody browse, because it's just what they naturally are going to want to, you know, choose. And so it might create nice cover for a hunter and for your purposes there, but whether or not it's truly beneficial for the deer and the deer population is another thing.
And I would slightly, I don't know, not necessarily disagree, but push back. And I know Dr. Harper would say too, that deer's diet is 90% woody browse.
Yeah.
So the key is to give them the quality woody browse. Yeah. And so things like red osier dogwood, spice bush, which that has exploded out there. And so giving them the right, maple, you know, and then supplement it also with those, with that grouse and the roos and all that stuff.
So. And I, as an arborist, hate seeing the hinge cuts, because the way that the stems are growing off those aren't secure collars, and they're not like the branch collar isn't, there's a term for it that I'm blanking on it, and I should know this.
You should try coming up with names for people.
I can't do that either. But essentially, it's a weak attachment point. That's what I'm looking for. It's a weak attachment point. And those branches, as much as in 5 years that looks right, they're not going to last. They're going to fall off, and they're going to break. And we see that a lot. The poor pruning practices on a tree, people will do similar to that, where they cut back, you know, the tips that are coming over towards their house, and they cut it back, and now you just have this 4 foot stub.
Yeah,
that stuff will start growing off the end or off the top of it, and those branches end up breaking and landing on houses, on yards, on cars, because it's out of the way, it's out of my face, and now it's growing up. But those are weak attachment points that when wind comes or it gets rustled, they're breaking. And that, you know, whether that matters when it's in the woods, probably not, but it just doesn't look appealing to me.
And I guess I would say, instead of doing a hinge cut, do a flush cut or a full cut. Leave, you know, 2 feet of stump up there. Allow those volunteers to come up and sprout, because that's giving you the same nice woody browse. It's giving, and if you're cutting a decent tree down, there's enough cover there. Leave the top.
Yep. They'll even hit those buds right off the bat, and you'll get a little. I think that there's, when you're first cutting, like we have done cuts where, especially when we first got to this property and there was no ground cover, it was just a pretty monochromatic crown. Doing that initially, that first year or two, you're going to get some, it's a temporary fix until you can then reestablish a lower, some biodiversity in terms of that spice bush, that kind of thing. And I think that's where it should be used, is that 2, 3, 4 year mark, you need to have faded away. You can do that right off the bat to give them something right away. But while you're doing that, you should also be taking the steps for that long term, because otherwise, you're just going to have to hinge cut your entire woods every 4 or 5 years when those start dying off, because it will die off eventually. Yeah.
And I'll tell you, doing TSI or doing, like, having our woods timbered, those hinge cuts were a pain in the butt, because now you got to go back through, cut them all down flush in order to be able to haul out timber.
And not for nothing, they're a dangerous cut to be making.
Very much.
You know, if you choose a tree that's a little too big in diameter, it's going to barber chair like a hinge cut does, but it might kick back. It might have too much mass, and now you've got, you know, a dangerous cut on your hands.
Yep. So I think it's, we really weren't going to talk about all this, but it's, I think it's a temporary fix to a longer term issue. I think it's a, it's not probably the best, it's certainly not the best management. And the ones that I see using it tend to be people who, I got to be careful how I say that, but I think typically it's a tool that is used by people who don't fully or have not been fully educated on how to manage a forest. Yeah. And not that I mean, my education was 30 years ago.
Right, and times have changed.
But I have the benefit of staying involved in reading and having two kids that are foresters. So.
Right.
But so do you, I know you don't always get to listen to the podcasts.
I mean, I always have the option.
Do you have a favorite? Like, can you remember a favorite podcast?
I don't like listening to the ones I'm on. Yeah. It's just something about listening to yourself talk. I've listened to one or two because Joe's put it on in the car or asked me to, kind of thing. I know that I laughed the most at Ninny and Nate St. James and those one. Those.
Oh, you were on
one. I was on that one. It was the first one. So I don't know if Ninny was on the first one. It might have been just Aaron and Sean. And some of that is because I know them and I know some of the stories they're telling. Right, and, you know, and so there's that little added benefit. And so those ones have always made me laugh the most. Mm-hmm. But I like the interviews with other guys that, like, you know, like a Moosey or Justin Michelle had some great stories that are just, you know, just cool things to hear about.
Yeah.
You know, and so there's kind of that, those are the two that I tend to lean towards more, less education. And I like the funny ones or the story ones.
Yeah.
You know,
I like the humor ones.
We've always got humor, you know.
But I think of like when we had Mom and JD and Carrie.
That one was funny.
That was funny to get a wife's perspective. Mm-hmm. You know, not that women can't hunt. I mean, we have Emily, Kim, and Rachel in our camp, but Mom and Aunt Carrie were just hilarious. they're just so cynical or
you funny. Know what story I don't think came up on that podcast that I would have expected out of my mom is her opening the freezer and a raccoon, whole raccoon falling out of the fridge at her feet.
Yeah, she screamed and what is this?
Yeah, I think her words were when I agreed to marry you, I agreed to, you know, the deer hanging and the butchering and all of that. I didn't agree to rodents in my freezer.
Yeah, so the backstory to that was you guys were trapping.
Yeah.
And we didn't
have time. It must have been, you know, we caught it and I was leaving for something or whatever. Yeah. And we put it in the freezer so it didn't smell.
Right. And usually we'll skin them out and then put the pelts in the freezer
as well.
When we're going to go flesh them. Well,
yeah.
This was a whole coon staring up at her through a plastic bag.
Not as bad as the skunk in the garage that Jake brought in.
Gosh.
And our garage was directly attached to the house. So you open that door and the whole house just got this waft of skunk.
He could always tell when you guys would run the trap line. I could tell before I could even see you. Oh, they got a skunk.
And you shoot them in the lungs so they can't push it out. But the reality is the moment they're in that trap, the whole set, I could smell it as I'm walking out there, I'll never forget. We only caught a couple of skunks, but I remember one of them, Jake checked the trap line or checked his half. I think it was, we did half.
Yep.
That's what we normally did. And we met up in the middle and he goes, "Hey, I got a skunk in a set way back there. I'm going to fall weekend for Young Life. Go take care of it." And I was like, "Thanks." Thanks. He didn't even dispatch it. Like he was just saw it and was like, "Nope." And kept walking.
Now, not to tell stories on Jake, but he got a cat in a foothold trap too. It was just a feral cat.
Mm-hmm.
And he was trying to let it loose. The thing went after him. Like it's screaming at him and, you know.
I was clawing at him.
So he had a stick that he was using to try and hold it back so he could get the foot, you know. And the thing attacked him. So he just
bonked it
on the nose. That was all it took. Thing dead. Dead. Okay, what do we do with that?
Didn't have a collar.
No. Well, cats don't typically. And then it was a feral cat.
It was. But, you know.
And, you know, if anybody's wondering, dead cats make great fox bait. But just throwing that out there. So if you see roadkill, that I learned from a trapper up in the Adirondacks. He said his neighbor came out one time and goes, "What are you doing?" Because he was out at a outdoor bench cutting stuff up. He goes, "Cutting up cat." And the neighbor was like, "What?" He's like, "Yep, I'm cutting up a cat." What? He's like, "It was a roadkill I found and cutting it up to make fox bait." I learned a lot from that guy. Gut was his name. he used to trap through the ice and mm-hmm. for beaver. I mean, he was a mountain man, and yeah. he was a mountain of a man.
Yeah.
But the mountain was growing out sideways. He'd been hinge cut. So, yeah, I'm not sure I could pick a favorite, like, in terms of podcasts. Yeah. I've had a lot of, for me, it's been a lot of fun to meet a lot of people, mm-hmm. to have conversations with people that I never thought I would get to.
Yeah, yeah.
And to hear people's stories. That's what I love, the stories. And we do some education, but
yeah.
The stories are the part that I really enjoy. And I think having you doing this with me, you know, that's part of the family piece yeah. of it. Having Emily on and Jake sharing his Africa mm-hmm. stories, and you know, that's we want to be family and stewardship. Yep. And I don't know that we've always hit the faith piece. We try and weave it in there. Mm-hmm. I don't want to be one of those podcasts that's let's do a Bible study. Mm-hmm. But I do want folks to realize that it's an integral, important part of who we are in yeah. our lives, and how we see the world. But I don't feel the need on this podcast anyways to,
you right.
know, to pull out scripture every time. But
yeah.
And then certainly stewardship we've hit on quite a bit.
Yeah, yeah.
That's definitely our spring topics typically. So
right.
Yeah.
There's no deer being taken, and so we go into how are we going to get him here next year? What are we going to do to take care of the property? And
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm looking. I want to do one on kind of the homesteading aspect of mm-hmm. chickens and our garden, what we do for that kind of thing, our systems there. And I want to, I don't know about this year. And I don't know. I want to look into doing honey at some point, because yeah. I think we do enough with trying to establish wildflowers and that kind of thing on the
yep.
property,
yep.
and we've got the area that we could put a honey, a bee hive set up, you know, a little ways away from home, like the cabin itself,
yeah,
and establish that. And I think that'd be neat to get our own honey, and
yeah.
you know, it's probably a bit more in depth and expensive than I think it is, but.
I mean, I
think it'd be neat.
I think those bees tend to be pretty docile, right?
Yeah.
And so if you
do it right.
Yeah, if you do it right, and if you're, I think the idea is to not get stung, right? And so you should be able to, you should be able to get a suit and a mask for relatively
right.
So, I probably ought to. I could reach out to. Kyle Liebarger from Native Habitat Project, because I know he does bees, but they're also hard to establish. Like,
yeah,
they ship them to you, and then you know if the hive doesn't take, then you gotta do it again, kind of.
Right,
thing. There's some issues
there. Yeah,
I might have to reach out to him. He's not been on the podcast, so. He might be a fun one to get on.
Yeah. I know when we were doing our management plans at Ranger School, my roommate had a partner of his that we weren't exactly friends with. He was kind of an odd dude. But his contribution to the management plan was one of the animals. We had to plan for certain species. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it might have been grouse and deer or something like that. Or we did birds, you know, like songbirds, that kind of thing. One of theirs was honeybees. And then their other one was bears. And so this guy, I mean, he made a whole spreadsheet of how they were going to make money, the breakdown of it. And it was a very wishful thinking kind of, you know, he's going to sell the pollen, or he's going to sell the bees for pollinators. They're going to get the honey. He had this whole plan of how much money they can make off of it. And simultaneously, the goals were, they have kids at this, you know, this management plan, and now we got bees around. And then everybody's just tearing them apart. And I asked them when they're presenting their plan, and I knew that this was one of their things. Because my roommate, I had asked him before, if you're planning for maintaining bees as well as bears, what are you going to do to keep the bears out of the bees? And I don't remember what his response was. I think he said that we're going to set up an electric fence around it or something. He had this whole plan for it, because they knew that question was coming up.
Yeah.
But.
Well, and that's, I mean, we don't get a lot of bears, but we do have them,
yeah.
you know, and...
Yeah, I was just talking to one of the Young Life kids that he lives near Letchworth, and he said that they have bears pretty regularly over there.
Yeah, yeah.
And I know that we've had bears in Letchworth. We had a season I don't know, 5 or 10 years ago this was, there was always, you could hunt bears in Letchworth because you could hunt deer. There was always a season. And then somebody took one in Letchworth a couple of years back. And it was posted on the news and everybody had this whole big wave and stink that we were killing the bears and they're, you know, they have just as much a part of Letchworth. And it was just like, and so now you can't hunt bears anymore in Letchworth.
Really?
Yep.
Because you can still hunt deer there.
Yep. But not
in the camping areas or where people are, but Letchworth
is it's a fairly large park. And they have a way overpopulated deer population. Oh, yeah.
So we've got a couple guys from Young Life, and one of them lives just outside of the park. And, I mean, he's ate up with hunting. And
oh, yeah.
He's taken some really nice deer. I should have him on.
Yeah, that's who I was talking to about this.
Oh, really? Uh-huh. Yeah, he was at breakfast this morning. We're talking about it. So he's, I think he and his grandpa are going to come to the dinner next week.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, that'd be cool.
And I'm hoping to get out turkey hunting with him. I told him I'd film, and he said, no, we got to get you a bird.
You've gotten a bird.
I've gotten a couple. Not a lot, because there just aren't, our populations aren't real. And I don't know that I've ever told the story of Charlie or Jake Jake's. And I. Yeah, so I was up all night for this. We used to do this thing called Out in the Cold, and we'd stay up all night and build homeless shelters, and we'd basically just stand by a burn barrel and freeze all night.
Sleep in a cardboard box.
Right. So then I took him out the next morning and to turkey hunt, and he was just going with me. He wasn't old enough to hunt yet. And we see these birds down in this bottom field. But I could see that there were people down in that area too. So they were heading towards a block of woods near us. I'm like, come on, let's go get set up in these woods, see if we can get them to come up here. And we had to hustle to get there. And I'm setting up decoys. I'm like, all right, Jake, you got to keep an eye out. Be watching for turkey because they'll be coming in soon. And then we'll. And I had him set by a tree as I'm setting up the decoys. And I no sooner gets done saying that. And he goes, you mean like that one, Dad? And I look, and there's a Jake right there. I'm like, oh, crap. So I quick get down. You know, I crawl back over to the tree and get the shotgun. And thing struts right in. I don't think we even called. Bam! The thing flops over. Finish it off and throw it in the bag, and we get out of there. Because we were on property that we were allowed to be on, but I just
knew. But you knew there were other hunters that were probably working that bird.
Yeah, and it was a Jake. And
yeah, I was going to say, it had a real nice full beard, didn't it?
It had a few hairs. It was young, but yeah. And then I got another one down at Dead Nuts, where I had been deer hunting the night before, heard him get up on the roost. Next morning, I'm like, I'm going to go shoot a turkey before I deer hunt. So I get up there, I get right, 20 yards off the tree. They pitch down. I gobble twice, or I clucked twice. Things pops its head up. Bam! And that one just wouldn't die. I mean, it just kept flopping. And
was that the same hunt you had a bison herd come on to you?
Same area though. That was, I shared that last week, but I had two toms just strutting their way in. I was on the hill there in the Emerald Forest. They were coming up out of the creek bottom about 50 yards from me, and I hear all this crashing to my left, and I turn, and I literally had to blink twice and rub my eyes. Am I seeing what I'm really seeing? This herd of bison coming into the woods. And it was seconds later, and I'm literally sitting still as these things are walking around me and breathing, and they're loud and they're big. And I'm like, holy crap. Like, I'm going to get stampeded here. Once they went back and I booked it out of there and went and told the farmer they got loose, and he's like, oh yeah, we know we have a hole in the fence over there, we have to go fix it. And I said, well, I don't know where they are, but I know I was really tempted to take one. He goes, well, that'd be a heck of a drag out for you. You can't just put a turkey over your back. I'm like, yeah, I know. So yeah, well, I think we've probably bored people enough. It's 53 minutes.
53 minutes.
That's usually about our target, is somewhere in there. And if you're listening and have been listening along with us to these 50 podcasts, we'd love to encourage you to share it with others and let others know.
Yeah.
Hit the like and the subscribe and all those other things.
Shares.
You do. Share and follow. And,
yeah.
And then also give us feedback. You can always, you can, you know, those who have my number, text me, or you can reach out to us on Instagram or on Facebook. We're at Beards Creek Adventures. And you can also email us at beardscreekadventures at gmail.com.
Yeah, we're always open for new topics or just general feedback, what we're doing wrong.
Yeah, yeah, it's usually what we're doing. People are very nice.
You know,
we haven't heard a lot of, like, you guys are terrible, you know.
Guy sucks.
And if you do send that to us, can you do it with a sandwich technique? Like, yeah, you guys are really attractive, but you stink at podcasting, but good job. You know, sandwich the complaint in there somewhere so we can swallow it a little easier. But all right, well, we'll be back next week. And this week we have our game dinner Friday night. Pete's coming up. We're going to be running the catch and release camo booth. So if you're in the area looking for a good deal on good camo, stop in, see us. It's at the New Testament Church on Standpipe Road in Perry, and it's a free beef on weck dinner, and then we also have a bunch of game meats and stuff to do with that. Got a ton of door prizes, raffle prizes. So, thank you to Drapes Archery and Hollerback Calls and Newcomb Blinds and Beards Creek for. There's a bunch of others, and I can't even recall all of them off the top of my head. Catch and Release. We got a package from Pete with a whole set for grill cleaning, and another set for like scent elimination stuff. So folks have been very generous, and thank you for that as well.
Yeah.
So. All right. Well, we'll talk to you next week. Thanks again for listening, and God bless.